the CITES meeting last week. I'm not going to report much to you because we'll receive a report back soon during the next week. I was planning to use part of today to report back on the rhino things, including CITES, but most of the departmental people are still in Bangkok, so the meeting only finishes this week, so we decided to move it to next week, Wednesday, the last part of next week, Wednesday, DG. Next week, Wednesday, the latter part of the meeting. I want them to report on everything, on an update on our workshop, the hunting in Daba, CITES, and there's one other thing. Oh, that manager's report, the RIM report, okay? So I don't know how we're going to fit all that stuff in, but let's try and see how much we can fit in. So what we're doing this week and next week is DIA, their budget vote. The strategic plan has only been tomorrow, so I decided we won't start with a vote today, we'll start with the consultant's report today for DIA. We get that out of the way as part of our budget hearing. Then tomorrow we'll start the budget hearings proper. Tomorrow, next Tuesday, next Wednesday. Part of next Wednesday will then be a report back on the rhinos, the half of that meeting, okay? And then the 2 weeks after that is Walker. Well, it's another week of Parliament, then there's a committee week. So that week plus the committee week we're using. And then there's a committee week starting in April, which we'll also use for water, for the water boards. Okay. So there's a lot of time we're using for water. Two committee weeks at least. We're using for water, okay? And then there'll be a week of public hearings, all those press statements we send out on the bill and on the green paper and so on, so on, so on. That program should have been sent to you. Has it been sent? Why is that ICM bill not in Parliament yet? State law advisors still have it. And they say they're discussing it with you. What are they discussing? Yeah, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, we're now still waiting. I mean, when did you hand that bill to Parliament? Oh, you haven't handed it to Parliament. Well, when did you hand it to the state law advisors? Well, you write them a letter and say, I request to explain in writing to us what the reasons are for the delay, please. Okay. Because it means that bill we won't be able to deal with now, because, I mean, it's clear we were going to give time till the end of March to respond. It's already almost the end of March. We haven't given out the press statement. So we'll have to change that press statement, Mr. Dawood. I suppose it's not, I mean, you just wait. So we'll have to change it, okay? Okay, yes, ma'am.
Apologies, Jay. We had in the program that we discussed with Chileka during last week, we have all of the conservation issues with the entities scheduled for Tuesday. Do you want us to swap that with Wednesday to then couple it with the rhino matters, or do you want to deal with on both days with the conservation?
I think the conservation stuff includes Sandparks and Isismangaliso. So, I mean, they can report on everything except the rhinos. I mean, of course they can report on the rhinos as far as money is concerned. But all these, the Ndaba, the CITES, the RIM report, all that then come on the Wednesday, okay? I'm trying to, this new thing, trying to put subjects together. So you guys must sit and look how you're going to make that input in a way that makes sense. I'm leaving it up to you how to work it out, huh? And then there's biodiversity after that, and so on, and we'll spill over to Wednesday. And Dalietu is separate. I didn't know where to fit it in. It doesn't seem to fit in anywhere.
Yeah, no, Chair, we're doing Indala Yetu and the final feedback on Buyisa back also next week Tuesday, because we're dealing with all the entities. So we will also be dealing with SOARS on Tuesday next week.
Yeah, but SOARS comes under climate change.
Yes, so that's why we put the program
so
and then all the entities together.
It's conservation, biodiversity, so that includes Sunbi, climate change, and then Indala Yetu. You say you're putting
SOARS, you
say
and the weather
surge. SOARS under climate change.
Yeah.
That's the third one.
Yes.
Now that may spill over to the Wednesday. Yes. Looks like it'll spill over to the Wednesday.
Yeah.
So tomorrow you've got time to deal with all your budget stuff and all that stuff. So that we get to those specific items on Tuesday and Wednesday. Okay?
Chair, we will also be including oceans and coasts on the Tuesday, because they have a link both to the weather services in terms of climate and to biodiversity in terms of the
country. Okay, just write all that up and send it to Chileka. Let me have a look at it, okay?
We've done that already.
And we'll start at 9 o'clock on Thursday, Tuesday and Wednesday, just to make sure, okay? 9 o'clock, Tuesday, Wednesday. Tomorrow we'll start. Okay, let me just look at you. Oh, you all look fresh. You look fresh. I'm the only one who looks tired. Okay, tomorrow we'll start 9:30, next week we'll start 9. Okay. Alright. That's it. Alright, so we have the AG. Who from the AG? You, sir. What is your name, sir?
Morning, Chip.
Two other people have come to talk to me about this. Now I get the third person. Your surname?
My name is Naeem Sidat. I'm a corporate executive from the office of the AG. We'll be presenting and taking us through this morning's presentation, together with my colleague on my right, Krishna Yansa van Rensburg, who was involved in conducting the audit over the course of the last couple of months.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I'll get going. Honourable members, chairperson, obviously, departmental representatives, we will today be taking you through some of the key findings of our recent report on the use of consultants, as was tabled in Parliament. At the outset, I just want to remind the members that the report is available on our website, www.agsa.co.za. And I think this committee will be forgiving of us for not printing that many copies in order to be as environmentally friendly as we possibly can. Members, I'll begin by just reminding the members and the committee as to the reputation or mission promise of the Auditor General of South Africa, that we exist.
Don't worry about that. I think we know by now why you're there.
Chair, the subject of the matter is a performance audit, which is important for the members to bear in mind, as well as to why performance audit on the use of consultants was conducted by government and how that differs from other audits. And this is important, I think, for the members to be able to frame correctly the findings that have been presented. As an office, we have noted that the use of consultants is a significant line item in the income statement, as you will, representing over 102 billion rand over a spend of over 3 years. And so it represents significant expenditure and one of the reasons why we selected this area for audit. We have members also recognize that South Africa does face a skills crisis, and that we truly do have a need for specialists from all different sectors of our economy to contribute. However, we also realize that the use of consultants is a relationship of national importance, that the relationship between third-party service providers and the state is one that exists not just in our country, but in countries around the world. However, let me temper that by saying we believe strongly that as a state, as a nation, we can truly benefit from the use of certain expertise from the public sector, from the private sector, but that must be used correctly. Interestingly enough, the report that we're tabling and we will be sharing with you today, a similar exercise was conducted in the United Kingdom in 2010, and a report such as this one was tabled for the United Kingdom. Very interestingly, many of the issues that we are grappling with as a country are prevalent in their report as well. And so it's important to keep that in context as well, that this is, these are issues of universal problem, and they need to be tackled in a way that is sustainable. We also conducted previous performance audits on the use of consultants by the government in 2002 and 96, and part of this work was to follow up on those findings to see whether there has been any progress in terms of addressing those weaknesses. Before I just continue, I'll take a minute just to share with you what this performance audit is and how it differs from the work that the office normally puts out every year. And the distinction between a performance audit as we're presenting today versus the regularity audit, which is the annual audit that we present. The regularity auditing is a traditional audit that focuses on the finances, deals with financial statements, financial management, and whether the accounts are true and fair and whether the departments are complying with relevant prescripts and legislation. And that is done on an annual basis. Performance auditing, on the other hand, is what we'll be dealing with today, and it focuses on the three E's. And you'll hear us talk about these three E's during today's proceedings as we go through the findings. The three E's really are economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. Economy, are we getting the right value for money in terms of cost? Are we procuring at the right time, the right quality, at the right price? In terms of efficiency, is there a relationship, an optimal relationship between what we put in versus what we get out? So are we putting in as little as we can to get the most out of it? And then effectiveness, are we achieving the objectives that we set out to achieve when we went out to use consultants? Now these three E's are from the Constitution or set out in the Constitution of South Africa as well in section 195. Chair, moving on to the next page, slide 5. Slide 5 is a graph that presents an overview of the departments that were audited and just places into context the split of that 102 billion between provincial and national expenditure. You'll see that the national expenditure accounts for 33% of the total, and the provincial expenditure the other 67% of the total. The national expenditure amounts to roughly 33.5 billion over a 3-year period. You'll see it started off in 2008-09 at around 10.5 billion and then escalated to the 2009-10 value of 11.5 billion, and then stayed more or less at that level for the 2010-11 year. Chair, before I move on, it's interesting, important to note as well that similar audits to the ones we've tabled for the national departments are underway in the provincial spaces as well, and these will be tabled within the next couple of months. On the next page, Chair, page 6 is a further split of the departments in terms of their spending on consultants. In total, 8 national departments were audited, and those 8 national departments represent an expenditure on consultants of 24.6 billion over the 3-year period. We chose these 8 departments as the subject matter of this audit because these 8 departments, roughly 20% of the national departments, account for 74% of the spend. So from an audit perspective, this represents good bang for buck in terms of our scarce auditing resources. Our selection in terms of departments is also guided by the outcomes of previous audit work that we had conducted, financial audit work, as well as other assessments in terms of where we thought problem areas might lie. Chair, moving on to the next slide, the key focus areas of the audit.
Can you just, before you start, sure, Chair, I think it's important that you give us a definition of consultants.
for the purposes of this audit, we have adopted a very broad definition of what a consultant is. And we say we've adopted a broad definition because for us, any relationship with a third party that has an is of an arm's length nature, for us we consider it under the broad term consultant. Now if one looks at the Standard Chartered of Accounts definitions of what a consultant or what a third party is, there are three definitions. The first being a consulting or professional service, which is really those specialist services and skills that are required for the achievement of a specific objective. The second definition is a contractor, which are of non-specialized nature and not core to the business. And the third definition is an agency or outsourced service. Now, for the purpose of this audit, the term consultant refers to all three of those categories. To make it easy for you to...
Any contract, any outsourced service,
that's right.
Any of those kind of things are all under this definition of consultant.
They're all under this definition, that's correct.
Because all services you receive from outside. And it's not consultant in the word, in the prerogative way that is used in the media.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very important we get this. It's very important that we get this right, because that's one of the problems I had in the AG came and talked to. Because you guys then, when you do your audit, you don't make a distinction. You just got all these people lumped in there, and you tell us it's all, and then the media go crazy with all the consultancy fees. But a lot of that is actually services that is rendered in the usual way to the department. I mean, so any contractual, your IT comes from outside, then that is part of this. Right. I just wanted to have that clear. So that's part of my problem with this order, that it doesn't help us.
It covers all of those.
Yeah.
It covers all three of those categories.
But you see, the problem is, this is what I said to your deputy AGM, and I said to Madame Muller as well when she came and said, my problem is that's great to have that information, but it doesn't help us. As members of parliament, it doesn't help us. Because if there's not a clear distinction, what you regard as people that shouldn't have been consulted is more what is important to us. Because the others, if it's a service that's delivered, and that service must be delivered, then it must be delivered. All that we must just check is that proper tender processes have gone through and that it's done correctly. So I say this from the outset because I want you to understand, although I have tremendous respect for the work you do and the vital work you do, and I will do absolutely everything to assist you in that. But you're going to have to give thought on how you do this thing. Because this information is not useful to the public, is not useful to us. What I want is, you can do audit of all these, but they should be in categories. And the ones I'm looking for are the ones where they have services in the department and then they outsource that work. Then I want them to come and explain why that's so. That is the issue that's important.
Sure.
And if we don't have that distinction, this information, I mean, we're going to walk away, it's going to be like kissing your sister. Very important to kiss your sister from time to time.
Yeah.
It's not the most exciting thing to do.
Sure, Chair. May I refer you then, later on, it's coming on page 10 of the presentation, which is a full breakdown of every single one of these contracts, categorized as to which one they fall into, whether they are consultant, contractor, or interestingly enough, also, through our work, whether it is a consultant, an agency, or a contractor, many of these focus areas that we're talking about are equally relevant. So, for example, planning. Whether you are using a consultant by definition, or an agency or outsourced provider, planning still needs to be robust. And the appointment process, Chair, as you pointed out, also needs to be robust. So these focus areas really are what guided our work in terms of the areas that we looked at. We looked at planning and appointment processes for consultants. We looked at internal capacity issues at the department that were either used as a reason for obtaining a consultant or were the primary driver behind going out for consultants. We looked at training and transfer of skills from consultants to employees, and performance management and monitoring of consultants, the extension of contracts, as well as the closing and finalizing of projects. Chair, this framework, if you like, appears on page 108 of our detailed report in a bit more detail. And I mean that on page 108 of our detailed report, we have what we call key audit questions. So for each of these round blocks, there's a number of questions which form the basis of the audit. And we think that that will help the members going forward in terms of what questions you should be asking around each of these areas. So that would be a very helpful guide to you. On page 8 of the pack, honourable members, we have just highlighted at a broad level what were the issues that we picked up across all departments. So what were those transversal problems that were found across the departments? What we wanted to highlight here is that some of the issues that we found within the Department of Environmental Affairs are not unique to the department. The issues that we have found in other departments, no doubt some of them systemic and issues that recur across many areas. In terms of planning and appointment, some of the key recurring issues were around comprehensive needs assessments not being done, competitive procurement processes not being followed, as well as expectations on milestones, timelines, and costs not being clearly specified. I'm not going to go into too much detail on this slide because I would rather spend time talking about the department-specific issues as they will come a bit later. In terms of internal capacity, issues around appointing consultants where permanent capacity could have been created, as well as appointing consultants due to the lack of internal sufficient capacity. With regards to training and transfer skills, we often found cases where skills transfer was ineffective despite being in the contracts themselves, and performance management and monitoring was another area where effective oversight and internal controls were not functioning. Chair, if we look at the detailed report, we have a table there in which summarizes all of this that I've just presented here. And if I had to highlight two areas which were of the most significant concern, those are planning and appointment. If we look at the 124 contracts that we audited as part of this audit, almost 86 of them had issues with planning and appointment across all departments. The second area of concern was the performance management and monitoring. And those across all departments were the two big areas that needed to be firmed up. Chair, on page 9 of the pack, we're now moving into the department-specific issues, and I'm going to ask my colleague, Krishna, to take us through the detail as we proceed. Krishna?
Thank you, Naeem. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. On the slide, you will see that the total expenditure on the consultants that we audited of the financial statements from 2008-09 to 2010-11 was 550.6 million. It should, however, be noted that these specific expenditure on consultants, contractors, and outsourced services include both voted funds as well as donor funding. That's why it will not 100% correlate back to your financial statements under consultants, contractors, and outsourced services. We audited 15 projects to the value of 57.6 million rand, and the average vacancy rate at the department was
30.3%. I mean, you don't do the all the everything you regard as consultants, you didn't go and audit all of them. You've only done 111. That's an acceptable sample.
Yes.
Okay. Then just below that, you see the graph giving us an indication of the breakdown of total expenditure in agencies and support to outsourced services, the consultant part, and the contractors. And it's quite evident from this specific graph that the majority of the amount is being spent on consultants within the Department of Environmental Affairs, the previous Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. If we move over to the audit findings, you'll see there we listed 15 contracts that we audited,
it's giving you a holistic view. Project, so it might happen that it's outside of the 3-year period that we are talking about within the report.
And how do I use these pinks and these green and blue things? Do I add all of them up?
I'm going to take you through an example and tell you exactly.
On this page, I want to understand this page. On the top, you tell me it's 550. Then you tell me you only ordered 57. And then you give me pictures of 550. That's 180 is 360 plus 140, that's 400 something, and all these bits and pieces. So I'm trying to understand the figures you gave here are all the so-called consultants. So it's not the 57.
No, this specific graph is representing all the expenditure on consultants, contractors, and outsourced for this person.
Give us that detail. There's three categories there. Agency, contractors, consultants.
Yes,
three
honorable
categories.
Yes, honorable chair.
And what does consultants there mean?
Consultants there is referring back to the definition that we had a look at earlier. Remember, within consultants also you can divide it between core and non-core businesses. So we still didn't divide it between core and non-core businesses. You just focus on the normal definition of consultants, which indicates that it's a specialist services and skills provided that are required for the achievement of a specific objective with the aim of providing expert and professional advice on a time and material basis.
But it doesn't tell us whether it's one that could have been performed by the department or not. You're not telling us that.
No, Honourable Chair. If I can go on the audit findings on slide 10, like I indicated, this is giving you a holistic picture, a one-page summary of the audit that we performed at the previous Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. You'll see we listed firstly the type of service that was rendered to specific consultants, then the best available amount associated with the contract, the period of the contract or service, and like I indicated, remember if a contract ran over more than the 3 financial years, we would have audited since the inception of the contract. Then it's classified in terms of a consultant, contractor, and the agency or an outsourced services, just to give you that view on exactly where the specific project fits in. And then it's giving you the areas where we found specific findings relating to that specific consultant in terms of our sub-focus areas being planning and appointments, internal capacity, training and transfer of skills, performance management and monitoring, extension of contracts, and the closing and finalizing of projects. And then the last 3 columns is giving you an indication of which E the specific finding relates to. It's very important, Honourable Chair members, that you need to understand that if we take specifically an economy issue, that we as auditors are not saying that the whole project was not economically concluded. What we are saying is that our finding relates specifically to that economic E when we audit it. If I can quickly take you through one, let's quickly have a look there on the very first one, developing the national framework as contemplated in Section 7 of the National Environmental Air Quality Act. It was done by the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. The best available value of the contract was 3.8 million. The period of the contract was from the 22nd of March 2007 up until the 30th of April 2008. We classified this specific appointment as a consultant. We had findings in terms of the planning and appointment process, and that specific finding impacted on the economy E during the audit.
What does that mean?
It means that at the end of the day, whether it is the
right resources at the right timing, at the right place, at the lowest cost. So in other words, when we go into the detailed findings and we have a look at the time period that it took to appoint consultants, contractors and outsource services, as well as the increase in amounts from the estimated amounts to the contract amount, it means that it affected the specific economic procurement of the consultant. Although we are not saying that the procurement was not done economically in total.
But the deficiency is under the economy and it's under planning.
Yes.
So in the planning process, there was deficiency as far as the economics of the process was concerned.
Yes, Honorable.
That's why there's two kicks, those two kicks. The next one has got three kicks.
Yes, Honorable.
The next one will be also on the economy side of things, of whether it was bang for your buck, and there are that two deficiencies under planning and under internal
capacity.
Which one of these, you know these 11 projects, which ones of these 11 projects do you say should have been done by the department itself?
Honorable Chair, I think you will see that there are two.
First one doesn't look like it. The first one looks like kind of serious, but the second one is not. Second one, to assist in working out the backlog for waste disposal.
Yes, Honorable Chair, there we did allocate it to internal audit of internal capacity.
Yeah, but which ones of these do you think the department should have done it themselves and shouldn't have got either a consultant agent or a contract?
Honorable Chair, you will see that there have been marked two contractors or consultants, contractors and outsource services, one being Jefferson Green in terms of the assistance with the backlog, as well as the let's just get to the page, number 12, GDP Public Finance Consultancy CC, where we also mark internal capacity. So where we specifically mark internal capacity, according to us, that is where the department should have created capacity within the department themselves.
Should have created. So they hadn't, and without the capacity, they had to get someone else. Is that what you're saying? But
yes.
This is the type of work you think where they could create their own capacity and do it themselves.
Yes, I'm
so it makes it a bit clearer to understand. So the red ones, 2 and 12. The others, then, do I assume all the others, they do not have the capacity, and they shouldn't have had the capacity?
According to our evaluation, no. The peer consultants, you get them in for a short period of time to provide a specialist skill that you don't have to retain within
your
department.
Well, you look at the staff problem, and you see whether there's the kind of staff that can do that job. If they should have had that staff, then you put a kick. If they don't have that staff and they haven't got the budget for it, then you don't put a kick.
No, Honourable Chair, it could also include instances where you can get, like for instance, GDP finance, a specific function that has to be rendered over a number of years continuously, which means that you might not have that specific position on your establishment yet, but because you have that function that needs to be done continuously, it would have been better to create that specific on your establishment.
And I understand that, but so that is why you pick the finance one.
Yes.
Because they don't have the staff that they should have.
Yes, Honourable Chair.
Now that's the question I have. You just misunderstood. What I'm saying really is if I don't see a tick here, then it's not a place where they should have had the staff. When I see a tick, it's where you think they should have had the staff, but they don't have it.
Yes, Honourable Chair. Okay.
Is that right? Understanding that.
I'm not going to.
Every single one, the planning is wrong. Deficiency. Every single one. Except for 15. For 15, nothing is wrong.
Yes,
I'm
not this, Honourable Chair. We did not find any findings in respect of
what
project
kind of,
number.
What kind of things are the planning that you find is wrong in the department? What are they doing bad?
Honourable Chair, if you will allow me, as we go along,
okay.
We will get into
right.
the details specifically where we talk about those issues.
Okay, let me give you a chance.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So this is just giving you a realistic view of the specific audit and where we find deficiencies during the audit. You will also see if you turn to slide 12.
Sorry, just before you go, the blue column, the ticks on training, there's two of them. What does that mean? There's deficiency on training and the transfer of skills. Why did you give those two ticks?
Yes, Honourable Chair, it means that in both instances they had findings on the training and transfer of skills. You will notice that on the one, specifically GDP, Public Administration Consultancy, the inefficiency in respect of the training and transfer of skills was forwarded into the public report, whereas the training and transfer of skills on Bimboni sustainability training on site other publications is not being taken forward into the public report. It remained within the management report because we didn't see it as a crucial aspect to be included in the public report. In terms of GDP finance, there were no skills transferred because it's a peer consultant. We expect within the contract that there should be a training and transfer of skills clause to be included, and none of that was included in the terms of reference or in the contract. And that's why it's been highlighted in the public report.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Slide 12, you will see it's just adding up all the numbers. We're getting a total of planning and appointment deficiency. And you can see, as Honourable Chair already highlighted to you, 14 of the 15 contracts that we audited, we identified planning and appointment deficiencies. In terms of internal capacity, we identified two projects, training and transfer of skills, two projects, performance management and monitoring, two projects, extension of contracts, four projects. We will focus a bit on the specific extension of contracts as we go deeper into the detail, and then the closing and finalization project zero. So if we can turn the page to the next slide, on slide 13, that is giving you a list of all the variations per contract. Now you will see in the previous Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, there was only one contract, MIC Consortium, in terms of the Public-Private Partnership Transaction Advisor, that had a variation being approved where money was attached to it, 1.5 million rand. And that was due to the consortium that did not have the environmental and heritage specialist as required by the terms of reference, which has to be procured by means of a variation order. Then there's three additional contracts that's been listed there. The first one is establishment of the inventory assessment of infrastructure and the capacity for the development of national implementation plans, the development of South African air quality information systems, and the support the development of the environmental management framework. In all these three instances, there were variations, in other words, it was time extensions, but there were no money attached to it. It should, however, be noticed that these specific statistics are given based on the period that we audited. So where the contract was not finalized when the audit was done, it could have been that subsequent variation orders were enforced.
So only one of them had a cost indication.
Yes,
they had to vary the contract and it cost 1.5 million more. Is that it?
Yes, Honourable Chair.
Other than that cost indication. Okay.
Okay, if we can go into the contract specific challenges. Firstly, we divided the report into sections. Section A, that is where we focus on transversal findings. In other words, it's the same finding that we found at different of the projects that we audited. The section B, where we focus on project-specific findings during the audit. The very first block there, you
you will see we identified 10 consultants with a total contract value of 41.2 million rand, where comprehensive need determination, which includes market-related costs and project estimates, were not performed, which resulted in an increase of 81% between the estimated project cost of 22.8 million to the actual contract cost of 41.2 million. This resulted from project costs that were limited to the available budget, as well as projects that were sometimes related to unknown fields of work, which made the cost estimation quite difficult. Then in terms of the second block, this is also a transfer.
What did the first thing do? They just undercalculated everything.
Yes.
That's what means comprehensive need determination.
Yes, Honourable Chair. It's specifically focusing on the relation of market-related costs as well as the project estimate. So in other words, they underestimated the cost during their planning process.
Almost half.
81%.
Communities on investment in projects,
and some of that capacity is never going to be permanent. And there is a skills transfer process that happens between national and provincial. Of course, we probably we don't write contracts as well and the specifications as well based on the findings of the AG. And I think we can improve in that. But we learn by doing, unfortunately.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So maybe before I go into the second deficiency, I just quickly want to highlight there to you that you'll see we color-coded the blocks to just focus the attention of the Honourable Members on the action or the level of scrutiny that is recommended by the AG to assist with the monitoring during this process. I know some of the copies didn't come out clear, but the real colors are green, intense scrutiny of strategic plans and accountability reports. Pink, activities should be monitored quarterly, and purple, follow-up on corrective action against action plans. Just to give you an idea of why the specific color coding was used in the different blocks. The second deficiency in the middle resolved around the delay in the appointment process, where we identified 7 contracts to a value of 27 million rand, where the appointment process took on average 7 months since the initiation up until the appointment letter, and an average period of 3.4 months since the tender closure date to the appointment date. And that was as a result of tender and evaluation meetings that were frequently cancelled, as well as poorly coordinated planning and activities. Both these findings had the effect that there was consequences and the timing and the cost of appointing consultants, as well as the prioritization of the projects within the budget. Because as the DG already indicated, the department only receives a specific budget per year, and within that budget, they need to prioritize the use of consultants to make maximum use of the consultants. Then let me move over to the specific findings on specific projects. The first one is assistance with the backlog in the approval of the waste disposal site. The department appointed Jefferson Green for 4.5 million rand for a period of 15 January 2009 to 14 January 2010. Firstly, what is important to notice was that the licensing function was transferred from the Department of Water Affairs to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. Secondly, in 2007, Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism identified that they had to appoint a service provider to assist them with the backlog. But however, due to reprioritization in budget, that resulted in the service being postponed. So Jefferson Green was then appointed on the 15th of January 2009 to assist with the specific backlog in the approval of the waste disposal site. And auditors indicated that the contract cost could have been minimized had the necessary funding and resources been transferred at the same time as the function was transferred. When the auditors referred to the lack of capacity, we do not always refer to permanent capacity. It could also be short-term or medium-term capacity when we're speaking about lack of capacity. It is also important when we're talking about the minimizing of costing that we are relating it to the minimizing of the cost associated with the consultant and not the cost in total within the department. If we move over to the next one, it's where the department appointed the Mbali Sustainability Trainee at an amount of 1.4 million rand and the initial contract period of 3 years to perform the stakeholder publication for them. The terms of reference were not clear and specific on the deliverables. What does that mean is the number of publications that had to be delivered was not included in the terms of reference. So what formed part of the terms of reference
was the fact that the consultants had to produce a production schedule, and only the production schedule will then at the end of the day direct the number of publications. So the previous Bunya Nala went out bi-monthly, and the new Bunya Nala was then set to went out every third month, and at the end only two publications were released due to the split in the department to Department of Environmental Affairs and Department of Tourism.
Two publications for 1.4 million.
Honourable Chair, I think it should be noted that the 1.4 million is the contract value that would have been paid if the contract would have run over the 3 years period, and then as such the necessary number of publications being delivered to the department. Yes, Honourable Chair.
Okay.
But then the contract was terminated. I think we must just be clear on it, that at 10th of May 2009, so it was well in advance before the 3 years were over, the contract was put on hold due to the anticipated split between the two departments. Then the next finding resolved around the development of the South African Equality Information System, where Gondwana Environmental Solutions were appointed at the amount of 4.9 million rand, and the period covered from the 1st of July 2007 up until the 30th of September 2009. The consultant did not have the required skills to procure the computer equipment, and the subcontractor had to be appointed. And as a result, the original by the contractor, they had a subcontractor.
What's the problem with that?
If
they had to appoint the subcontractor, then there would be a problem, because it means their contractor could do the job. But if they subcontract, what is problematic with that?
Honourable Chair, the problem with that is that within the terms of reference, there weren't sufficient detail included to guide the bidders exactly on what is expected of them when they need to purchase this specific equipment. And that's why when they went out and they got the subcontractor in, the initial design model was not compatible with the department system, and they had to then go back and make changes. So although there wasn't a cost implication, the initial contract period of 18 months was delayed by, or was extended by another 9 months to allow for this process to roll out at the end. Within the terms of reference, there was only one sentence included referring to the computer equipment.
See, for me, what you've got in the block is not important. It's the consequences. Now you tell me the consequences, now I know why you put it there. It's because not specific enough steps, and that was the delay.
Yes, Honourable Chair. The next consultant is about the public-private partnership transaction advisor that was appointed to MIC Consortium. It was a multi-year contract, and the total amount was 10.5 million rand. The appointment date 8 May 2007. On that specific contract, the bidder with the highest overall score was not appointed, resulting in the department including additional...
I'm a bit ignorant. Just tell me, what are the rules?
Honourable Chair,
how much discretion does the department have, or do they have nothing?
Honourable Chair, no, the department does have discretion. I think the key is that when the terms of reference is set, that the specifications must be 100% correct and adaptable to what the department wants to achieve. In other words, the department at that stage need to determine how they are going to evaluate the tenders, whether they're going to do only a cost-based or whether they're going to do a cost and quality-based No. So what that means is when they identified that specific approach, in this instance, they identified a quality and cost-based approach. In other words, they would first look at the quality of the different bidders, score them, where after they will only be scored on price, because the quality is very important in the specific circumstances. So after the price has been scored, the HDI still needs to come in. The previously disadvantaged, historically disadvantaged individual scoring, and then that at the end of the day will be added up, and that will provide a specific score to be taken where a decision needs to be taken on which consultant to be appointed. So what the department did in that instance is they went out, they put it forward as a quality and cost-based approach, and then they went through the whole process, scoring quality, scoring cost, and at the end of the day, they appointed the consultant with the highest score on functionality or quality and not the highest overall score, which the department may do, but within good management practices. When you set a minimum associated with your quality or your functionality, that minimum must be set at a level that you know as a department when you score somebody that they exceed that level, that they will be able to perform the work. And then after that, the evaluation will purely be based on price going forward.
But on functionality, they were the highest.
On functionality, they were the highest.
So that means in terms of their potential to be effective and provide the contract.
Honourable Chair, yes and no. Yes in the sense of what you're saying is 100% correct. No in the sense of where there was another preferred builder identified, which also passed the functionality. So in other words, by passing functionality, the department indicated that they will be able to perform the necessary work. By passing that, it's difficult for the auditors without proper documentation to determine what the department's thinking was around the fact of why didn't they appoint the person with the highest overall score. The documentation only focused on why they appointed the person with the highest functionality score. In other words,
okay,
they said it was the highest.
You're confusing me because previously you said they allowed to do that. So they're allowed to do that, then you put this red light in front of me by saying bidder with the highest overall score was not appointed, which immediately the red lights go on and it says to me, you think there's something wrong, you being the auditor. All the explanations you've given, you haven't shown what's wrong. What is it that you think was wrong? Because you tell me legally they're allowed to do this. The person with the highest functionality they appoint, not with the highest score in both categories. And then you write this to me, so what you're telling me is that there's something wrong. There's something scallop going on. Now, what is the scallop that's going on that you're trying to alert me to in code? Let's talk openly so I can hear. What was the... What? Huh?
Too low. But when you adjudicate on the high threshold on functionality. That is wrong.
But all this, as long as the threshold is the same as the whole lot, then that one of yours still has the highest functionality. The threshold may be too low, but I mean, as long as he doesn't tell me you cheated by giving the one a different test from another one. I didn't understand him to say that. The threshold might be low as far as that's concerned, but still high, it's the one with the highest functionality got. But they don't answer. I want to hear you. I want to hear why she thinks you scallop. Obviously she put this there because when I see this, I can see everyone's eyes go like this. The highest bidder wasn't appointed. They must be cheats. Why were they cheats?
Honourable Chair, performance audit is not focusing on cheats. Performance audit is focusing...
Adam, when you put these words, the bidder with the highest overall score was not appointed, you put that there for a reason.
Yes.
What is that reason?
Okay.
think there's two issues specifically in this respect. The first thing is the practice notes are quite clear that you're not allowed to change your terms and reference requirements as what you set out versus when you evaluate the specific bidders that come in. So in other words, if you put the tender forward in saying that you're going to use a quality and cost-based approach, you need to evaluate everybody on those specific requirements, all the bidders. So all the bidders have been evaluated according to that. And then the department turned around and said, no, I would rather go for the bidder with the highest functionality score. From the highest functionality score, I think the resulting aspects is more important, because now we're talking about the people or the consultant was appointed with the highest functionality score. At the end of the day, there was a number of non-compliance also identified during this specific appointment. Also, when this specific consultant that was appointed did not have all the skills, and remember from the previous slide where the variation order had to be put forward in respect of completion of the project. And then even going further, up until December 2011, on average, the delay in completion of the project was 1,446 days. I think taking everything into account, the process is what we are saying. As soon as you identify not to use your, they call it the preferred bidder, in other words, the person with the highest overall score, the department should document the reasons for not appointing the specific consultant with the highest overall score. So in other words, what the department said is, they said they want to appoint the consultant with the highest functionality score without documenting properly on why they didn't want to appoint the preferred bidder.
So the actual sin is they did not recall, which I think is a bad enough sin, but by the way. But the actual sin you're trying to tell me here, and you didn't see crooking as such, but that's why you put these words here, the highest bidder was not appointed. What you didn't see is that the information wasn't recorded on why they used the two tests, why the best result of the two tests wasn't appointed. They didn't record that. Is that the sin?
Yes, Honorable Chair, what we also recommended from the department, remember this is what came out of our audit. So what we recommended to the department is that they must go and do investigation in determining whether there was any non-compliance or somebody that needs to be taken disciplinary action against, and I'm sure the DG did that, and we left it at that stage for them to handle further. Such as the CFO, financial project manager and advisor,
And it's very important for the honourable members to take note that this finding is not focusing on compliance, because the department did follow all the required processes when they appoint this consultant. The deficiency here is the period during which the department made use of the specific consultant due to a lack of internal capacity. And you will see also in the report that we highlighted that from 2000 to 2006, there was no positions on the establishment, and since 2007, the department had difficulties in filling the position. The second aspect in respect of GDP public finance consultancy was the skills transfer that was not specified in the terms of references and the contract.
So there everything was followed, it's just that they keep on renewing this contract and going on and on and on and on and on. These consultants, are they necessary to have given them a clean audit for all these years? That it helped with that?
In terms of the greening project 2010, the department appointed Bembana Sustainability Training to assist with the development of the business plan at an amount of 264,000 rand, where no competitive bidding process was followed. So whereas auditors could not determine whether the appointment was made to the best advantage and the lowest possible cost to the department. No, Honourable Chair. The documentation indicated that the department seeing this project to be urgent. But as soon as you identify a project to be urgent and it gives you permission then to deviate from the required supply chain management processes, the department needs to document why they see the specific project as being urgent, whether it's viable, and then only approve a deviation to the supply chain manager.
Obviously, you've appointed staff to these positions. You can't read and write. This is now the second time when it comes to bid that they don't put down, write anything down. I mean, just check. I'll check for you just now. I'm going to ask them to tell us who that staff is. Then I'm going to let them have numeracy and literacy tests to see if they can write. Because clearly, they're not writing.
Thank you.
Get me those names along, eh? I want to know who these people are that don't write that. They keep on doing the same mistake. Okay?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to hand over back to Naeem to take us now through the key recommendations.
No. I mean, although you've had those columns, you showed 550 words, but in the end, this analysis you've done it was only of the 57 million.
Yes.
So what we can only see are the problems of 1/11 of the samples you've done.
Yes, Honourable Chair. When we do performance audit, we do not express an opinion. So we don't extrapolate or we don't make it towards the whole population. If we audited the 15 contracts, we will only report factually on what we found on that 15 projects.
Thank you for that, Chris.
See, the problem is then your guy must go and tell your big guy at the top. I should say there were 33 billion rand of consultants. If you only do it like you've just said, for this lot, it's only 57. If you only go and add up what you actually ordered and say that that's what the order was for. Because now, I mean, of the 550 million, you've only done 11 mean, I'm not saying that you can't then extrapolate from that, but in your own words now, you said you guys only report on the actual ones you've done. So you can see why, for me, it creates a problem if they want to create the impression of billions when it's actually 57 million. Well, okay, at least half a billion. Not billions, half a billion. Five billion. The bid, they don't even write why they did it. A lot of people with illiterate people in that department obviously can't read and write. Okay, let's get to your analysis, sir.
Thank you,
Chief. That was very useful, man. I asked a lot of questions, but it's because I'm not an auditor, so I don't know what it means what you've written. But I think it's very useful to see what the issues are. I think what this needs to be done is maybe you should reflect on slightly different ways. You want to use overall title, but you know, one has to delve down. I mean, if I take this document a year from now with my memory at 55, I wouldn't know what you said. And but if it was here telling me that the contract that to be extended or that the period was 9 months longer, then at least I know when I've got this document.
Okay.
But that's not a criticism, that's just detail that I... Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to continue from where Krishna left off. Certainly, we this is not an investigation, and we will not extrapolate the findings on a specific contract to others. However, what it has allowed us to do is to identify certain systemic weaknesses, and it's these systemic weaknesses which form the basis of a performance audit. When we looked at the subject to say, are we getting value for money through the use of consultants? And the audits that we picked up, the cases that we presented are just that, case studies to identify whether these systemic weaknesses exist and whether we can see a trend. So for example, in this instance in the department, clearly planning an appointment has emerged as a trend. And while we cannot technically comment on the rest, the trend is easy to see that this is a systemic weakness that we need to address and robustly.
The obvious one is the one you're raising, and I'm sure they can see it as well. If you do not have a clear idea of what you want, and you do not put the specifics up front, then clearly there's going to be problems.
Correct.
Because, I mean, whatever the tender comes from there, whatever plans come from there, they wouldn't know exactly what it is. I mean, I find it astonishing, I'm going to just tell you, that the contractors don't come and say, give me more specifics. I mean, I find it astonishing, because how do they do the job? Now, I would say, but what do you mean? But that's just me. I find it really astonishing. But that's a clear weakness which I can see. And then the other one is, of course, they just don't know how to write and record their ideas. Obviously, there's a huge problem with that.
Absolutely, Chair.
So that does get pulled down. One can see those threads.
Yeah. And it's those threads that I think are so important in order to create value for money. And let us be very clear from the outset what we as an office are not saying. We are certainly not saying or advocating the termination of the use of consultants. From the outset, we recognize that consultants can be a benefit if used correctly. That the process in which we take them through needs to be robust, that we document our decisions, etc. So definitely, we're not advocating the termination of the use of consultants. We're saying when you do have a need, let us make sure that robust processes are in place so that we obtain value for money from the use of these consultants. That is what we are saying.
Can I just ask you as well, when you chose these 15 from the whole lot, criteria, which one you look at, the one that you thought may be problematic that you somehow, and then the others you felt, okay, well, these are fine, they're run of the mill and they seem fine. I mean, just to give me a bit of a clear idea, how did you do that process?
Sure. Krishna, do you want to take us through some of the technical criteria? Yes.
Not all the details, just some idea that I have.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The process, once you identify a specific theme, in this case, where we said, here, we're going to audit the use of consultants at a specific department, or we go through a number of steps where we have a look what is in the public media, or what is identified by internal audit, the supply chain management processes. So we've got a number of specific criteria that we look at, and then initially we will say, let's say we take 30 or 35 contracts that we will have a look at, and we will measure these criteria against them, and then from that we will identify the 10 or the 15 that we're going to focus on.
Comes from management itself, comes from the department itself.
So senior management, the various accounting offices themselves, the executive authority as well, they all have a role to play in terms of making sure that the risks inherent in the use of consultants are being adequately managed. The next level assurance comes from oversight. And here it's important, you know, we've put across recommendations for National Treasury, for the EBSA, but the important one we wanted to highlight here is the role of internal audit and the audit committee in terms of making sure that the use of consultants is done in a way that creates value for money. Particularly internal audit. We feel internal audit really needs to play a very important role in terms of following up on management actions, but importantly conducting their own performance audits. It's not the mandate of the AG solely to conduct performance audits. Performance audits can and should be conducted by internal audit as well, and we feel that they should be playing a very important role in conducting their own value for money audits within the department. There is also obviously a role for independent assurance, of which this committee, as well as ourselves, form an important part. So we've done this audit in 96, 2002, it's now 2013 that we're taking another report. Let us not wait for another couple of years till the AG again decides to look into this matter. This could be an issue which could be done internally, as I said, through internal audit or whatever assurance mechanisms. But the assurance can be provided on a more ongoing basis. Chair, to sum up, just a reflection that in order for us to obtain the value for money that we so desperately seek from the use of consultants requires commitment by all parties involved. And I'm happy to note that through the process we have obtained commitment. Yes, we've had a few disagreements on certain issues and technicalities, but by and large the consensus has been that there's a recognition of the risks inherent in the use of consultants and that there is a need to firm up certain processes to make sure that we manage these risks. Chair, in closing, I just have one slide to share with the committee, and it's this equation that we've put up on the board, on the slide, that we recognize firmly that this report and the discussions that we've been having have been focused on the public sector. However, we have also not forgotten that there is another side to this transaction, that the private sector itself also is very important, and that it's only through both of these sides working together that we can create an equation where we create this enhanced citizen value. So the view we've made to the private sector through this process as well is that where they encounter weaknesses in government systems of internal control, that they should not take advantage of these, and that aspiring to be good corporate citizens with a good corporate conscience really should be something we all look forward to. Yes, some of us have looked at this and said, well, that's really an ideal, but what we're trying to bring to the party here is that there are improvements that can be made on both sides, and that realizing our common goals of economic success requires an effort by both parties, not just one. Chair, thank you. That brings us to the end of our presentation, but we remain at your disposal for any questions.
Any questions? Any comments? Okay. Let's wait.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the AG's office for the presentation. It was very comprehensive. Going through the tables, and if you could indulge me, please, I think we can go to slide 11. Item number 8, which is the development of South African equality information system and whatever it relates to. I happen to live in an area which is probably the most polluted in the country, which is the World Triangle. There is one of these monitoring stations. Now, I can assure you that since 2007 to 2009, that particular monitoring station has not been working. The equipment was inefficient, the printouts were not able to be delivered, and whatever question we have raised, this has never happened. But it was also linked to the local authority and the unfunded mandate. We are expected, local authorities are expected to perform a function which they actually cannot afford to source expertise. So it's basically the chicken or the egg. Is the department going to help? Is the municipality going to help? Who is actually going to be responsible? Who's going to fund it? Because it has been a ping-pong match all along regarding that.
then if we have a look at these particular consultants that have been appointed, it seems to be the department seems to like Bambanani very much, because they're going from printing, publishing to greening projects and so on. And both of them are being failed. Both the projects have failed in actual fact. So I think if you look at the column, really it says that the planning and appointments were inefficient. I think we need to have a look at that. Why is that particular company being favored when they are failing in all of those aspects as well? On page 13, the first one, the consortium did not have the environmental and heritage specialist as required by the terms of reference. Now surely that funding, the additional funding of the 1.5, should have been carried by the consultant and not by the department.
Okay, I'm just checking, are you asking this question to the department?
To the auditor.
To the auditor.
To the auditor.
Now, this will do seem more relevant.
Sorry. Well, no, I just think that from the auditor's side, is it correct that if the contract is awarded, that the department has to carry the additional cost when they are not meeting the contract conditions? Surely that should be part of the contract, and it should be financed by the contractee and not by the department. Then I think... if you look at slide 14, the delay and appointment process, the middle one, and it is the middle one. I think from the auditor's side, is there nothing that the audit report can reflect that the meetings are cancelled and the process cannot go ahead? You know, if the meetings are all cancelled and the evaluations and the tender processes cannot happen, how does it eventually happen? And if you have a look at slide 15, the contract period extended to terms of reference were insufficient. That's another evaluation. I think that needs to be taken very seriously. It's inefficient and insufficient. How can they perform that activity that they are appointed to do? And in the last slide, the auditors are looking at that particular one with concern, and the chair is looking at it as a legal aspect of the whole process, and I'm looking at it from a layperson's point of view. The highest functionality individual has not been awarded the contract, and questions have been asked as to why, but if we look at the bottom of the page, you can actually see the repercussions of that not happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for AGE's presentation. It's quite the full detail for this presentation. But I think it's the Chair. Like you, a lot of questions, we also have a lot of questions. We don't know where is, we can start from the AG side. Because from the AG side, what is your responsibility for the department is for the consultant is the appointment. Because you are under control, number one. This for appointment of consultant is all from the department side. They have their own budget. Even they utilize over expenditure, like inside your detail, is 9.7 million just 7 months. They already spent. But even from your table side, this one is you have the consultant have the 12, then you have the 14 print and the appointment. But you finalize your 3E. I think focus for you, you highlight the 3E. Then the 3E is the last one. Not anything is finalized. All the projects past 2006 up to today meeting, 2013, not any finalized closing. with the project. So your 3E, you only achieve economy, only huge, then efficiency, also huge, then effectiveness, is zero. So we spend a lot of money, and then by law, yes, yeah. Not anyone can terminate for the is a consultant. Even I think the department side are very, very interesting. They utilize the consulting is very good because it can save a lot of time, a lot of knowledge, a lot of experiences then contribute to the department side. But unfortunately, all the department utilize this consultant, all the spend, waste the money from government side. Because you show us already inside, it's the I don't know this 3E how we can say this is a score. Overall, if you want to count for the appointment for the this consultant for the overall score, I don't need to use minus 30%. So you only spend 26 billion, also highlighting in the public. So today I think there is quite a lot of detail inside showed to the us. Even I don't know how I can start this question, say, from the U.S. all the details. My question is, who take all responsibility for overspending for the this consultant? And what means for 3E? This 3E is nothing to show to us, is that you are success. Because your all the 14 projects is finalized closing is zero. It's zero, you show us it's zero. 14 inside, 14 planning. Then the past 6 years, then your closing project is zero. So I don't know. This one is quite good. The presentation shows us is how do the government can remediate this current situation. I'd like to hear from the AD side. You must show us how can assist this very bad situation. Well, from government, from the AG side, to the department side. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I was listening to the presentation, sir, and this presentation was well presented before us. First of all, Chairperson, when you appoint a person with relevant skills, to assist you as a company. In fact, your intention is to plant that particular skill to your company so that it can function very well. And the presentation that we have here is that this department, I'm just coming up with a perception from the report that we did, is that this department is run by the consultants. Because many issues are done by the consultants, which means our staff in the department doesn't have capacity. So I think that's the thinking and the presentation that I get from the AG. And the AG has presented a long period on this issue of consultants. I just want to check with the AG. When did they realize all the challenges that they are delivering to us? Because it seems it's a long period, 2007, 2009, 2010. Today this is 2013. When did they realize these challenges? And what were their recommendations to the department in order to deal with other issues? And Chair, many questions that I have here are directed to the department, but I'm not going to ask them. Because the report that we get here, it's the report that spoils the whole record that we have with the department. According to us, this department is performing very well. If there are challenges, those challenges need to be cleared immediately. It can't be stored for a decade before the AG comes with the input on those challenges. But the department is here
and there was quite a lot of emphasis on the use of consultants as if they are not really necessary or needed. And most of the local governments didn't have capacity, did not have, you know, municipal managers and so on. In fact, the coming elections, one is one, because not really many projects have been carried out or services being carried. But we found that there has been a great delay in the appointments of these consultants. And as a result, you know, the services are not carried out. So if there was a blanket, no, that's how we start. No consultants are required. Everyone should be employed into the community. But I really think that in the appointment of the quite a lot, and also the following up of all the people that have been consultants that come up very sharply in the last. So really, I would like to find out whether, you know, in fact, the recommendation that we just have been here, I think it should be ready for us. Because it shows that the consultants are not following and they are not ready until the many of the consultants. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I understand that as you said previously, this is water under the bridge. It's happened. You've looked at it. You've made the diagnosis and you've brought it to us. But yes, going forward, I have some questions, and particularly what Dr. Wong had asked as well. You've responded to some of it in terms of the trigger. What were the triggers that were used in order to select a department specifically or a project specifically? And you've responded to some of it, and our chair alluded to the fact that things like the media, the media. But yes, it's true. Sometimes that's how things are brought out. Very, very true in the fact is the extension of contracts is. What is the AG going forward do about or recommend about the extension of contracts? Because there seems to be in the report that we have that some of the extensions have just happened. And how or what is the recommendation in terms of going forward? How do we look at it and say this shouldn't be happening under certain circumstances? Because again, sitting from where we did and the report came out and there was all these billions of rand used for consultants, flags went up and people, me as well, looked at it and said, is there a lot of corruption there? Why are so many consultants doing this? Why are we using so much money? Are departments run by consultants and not by the departments? So those were flags that come up, and while I know you have an overall recommendation, I think there need to be some specific recommendations as well, particularly in contracts that are extended. Because there are millions of rands of money that are going to contract that are extended, and why should they be if the terms of reference are correct? Yes, the closing of the and finalizing of projects, I also saw that there was a zero, I've got it circled. And the thing that really bothered me in the public-private partnership in MIC consortium, and this is again going forward, the consortium did not have environmental and heritage specialists. If the terms of reference is such that it asks for that, and I know that the chief is subcontracting, if a person doesn't have it, they can subcontract. But surely, if we're looking for that kind of specialist, why would we give award a contract if they don't have that specialization? It's just a concern. It leaves the door open for some level of favoritism, nepotism. I don't want to use the word corruption, because this is not the straight, we have an excellent department. How did you answer this about, I wrote, who underestimated was at the department when we spoke about the comprehensive needs determination and the 10 consultants, and you went to great lengths to answer that, so thank you very much, but I think besides this, maybe we should have another conversation around that.
Evaluation of tenders, I really would like us to come back to that, and I think that's more to do with the department, what kind of delays, and again that comes to tenders that are extended because of delays. Why are those delays? Who's evaluating why those delays are there? And is it a delay on the department side, on the consultant side? What is causing that? Because I really have a concern about that, and I have to say, I do find it, especially when we're dealing with millions of rands here, why we don't have clear terms of reference. Our terms of reference must be so clear that if a consultant steps out of line, we as government can pull them in line or hold them accountable, and this doesn't seem to be happening. Again, when we're talking about urgent, and I know about urgent tenders, but it would be very important to know what those criteria are. Because we have an urgent tenure, so it's a very small amount of money in comparison to what else is given out. But it's important for us to know as a committee what constitutes those urgent tenders. Our skills transfer, and again I'm coming back to the fact that there's a perception that consultants run departments, are our vacancies filled? You know, yes, we've had a clean audit and we all pat ourselves on the back about that, and yes, it's a really amazing value add to have those consultants. But surely that's something that should be sitting in the department. And what does the AG's office say about that? Because a financial, in my opinion, I may be wrong, but a financial function should be a departmental function. It should not be a consultant's function. I hear the AG say that, yes, we must utilize, the planning should be robust. And I ask this question. We're saying the planning must be robust. We must know what we want. We must know our terms of reference. And I ask this, and not simply, are we going to get consultants to help us with that planning, to be that robust, if we internally don't have that capacity? And it really is something that needs to be looked at. Thank you very much, Chief. We can continue on to some of that.
Thank you, Ms. Ferguson. Responses, AG? Thank you, Chair. I'll do my best to respond to the members' questions. Please do let me know if I haven't answered them sufficiently. Although I do think that some of them are perhaps better answered by the department, and some of them probably the department will be in a better position than we are to answer them. Krishna will probably jump in, Chair, as I go through, particularly on the contract, on the question of whether, when the contract was awarded, and whether the contractor should bear the cost where there was an extension. Krishna will just share with us some of the aspects around the terms of reference to put that into perspective, as well as the delays in the appointment process and whether we can reflect or not on why it didn't happen, and the functionality aspects of the contract that we covered. Chair, I must still say that much of the detail that the members are looking for is contained in the detailed report, and specifically the section on environmental affairs, which takes each of the contracts and goes into a fair amount of detail in terms of what the issues were and specifically what the findings were. And some of the findings, yes, are a bit more complicated to follow, and hence I think it'd be important to read that detail in the report so that you can follow some of the issues, particularly, for example, the one around functionality. Chair, with respect to the question on who takes responsibility for overspending, again, you know, as the AG, we feel truly that this is a responsibility that lies with the department, and that this is one of the reasons why we are highlighting issues of value for money. That economy, efficiency, and effectiveness are the responsibility of the department, primarily. Again, I'll reflect back on the combined assurance model that we presented earlier as one of our key recommendations. The first level of assurance that the risks around the management of consultants should come from the department itself, from senior management. And as the first line of assurance, they should be the overall responsible body. With respect to the the question of when did we realize that all these challenges existed? Again, I want to remind the members that this is not the first time that we are doing this audit. That similar performance audits to this on the use of consultants were conducted in both 1996 and 2002 by the office. I just want to share with you an extract, which is in the report, by the way, on page 15, on what the main findings from those reports were. The main findings of those audits related to the acquisition and appointment processes, the monitoring and control of consultants, the department's responsibilities to create environments conducive for consultants to work effectively, and the implementation of deliverables. So you'll see, honorable members, honorable chair, that the issues that we raised in 1996 and 2002 are still prevalent today in the report that we've tabled. And so this has been an issue which we have raised consistently over the years as part of our performance audits as well as part of our annual regularity audits and engagement processes. With respect to this audit, we started engaging with the department as far back as 2010 when our initial preliminary findings started coming through in respect to some of the details that we presented in this tabled report. With respect to the question around the extension of contracts, again, we are not saying that the extension of contracts is by itself a bad thing. Contracts are extended in the normal course of business, and the prescripts and provisions and legal guides, etc., make provision for this. However, we have highlighted the risk that where planning is not done properly, where the robustness of the appointment and planning processes is not to a point where we have got them down, often this will result in an extension that is due to us not planning up front properly, so not establishing the proper requirements up front. And indeed, you know, the members' concerns around, for example, the terms of reference that is not clear is an example of this, where a contract would be extended because the terms of reference were not clear. Again, the question on what is causing these delays, you know, we talked about at length about the planning issues, and we truly feel that this is an area where if sufficient attention is given, that many of the aspects relating to planning, in fact, many of the other areas relating to the use of consultants will be solved. With respect to the vacancies and whether, you know, we should be filling those vacancies with our own people, again, let me re-emphasize that we are not advocating the termination of the use of consultants. However, where there were instances where we identified where internal capacity issues could have been sorted out, where permanent capacity could have been created, for example, the financial managers, those are areas which need to be looked at carefully. I think, Krishna, if you can perhaps add to that in terms of some of these specifics, we can try and round up some of the questions.
Thank you, Naeem. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think maybe the first thing that I want to focus on is in terms of the public-private partnership, where we indicated there was a variation order. The problem with this specific contract was that the requirements were included in the terms of reference. When the contract was signed, it did not include those specifications. So as such, the costs were not on the department side to finance the variation order. Then in terms of what is regarded as being an urgent matter, supply chain management guide, stipulating that it's quite interesting, if you allow me, I'll read it to you. Urgent cases are cases where early delivery is of critical importance and the invitation of competitive bids is either impossible or impractical. However, a lack of proper planning should not be constituted as an urgent case. I think the emphasis is on that planning should not result in an urgent case in that specific requirement, and that's where they say that the invitation of a competitive bid is either impossible or impracticable. So when they document the reasoning, they should focus around those specific concepts.
then in terms of the highest functionality that was awarded, you can find the detail in the report. You will also see, in terms of the other question where you asked about the postponement of meetings during the appointment process, that is also included in the detailed report that has been published. So it has been highlighted there.
Chair, I think we've covered all of the ones that we feel we are able to respond to now. I think some of the other aspects...
What we will do is we speak less follow-ups after the department. All right. Look, I'll make some comments about the AG just now, but let's quickly go to the department's input. What I need, EG, I want you guys just to concentrate on solutions. I'm not so interested to hear. It's all recorded now. There may be differences of opinions between you guys here and there on interpretation. We can't solve it, so that's not going to help us much. But I'm really looking at just for... This issue here we've solved, this issue we've solved, this is we've solved. And then to make sure that you're not lying to me, when Mrs. Miller, whoever is your auditor, comes, please, you guys are listening at the auditor's general's office. I don't know who is Ms. Miller, is also in charge of DEA. Sure, sir. When she comes, I want her to tell us that all the things you found, whether they've been sorted out or not. Okay? All these things you've found, I want to hear from her what she found recently. But let's give the department a chance. Who's going to talk?
Let me start, Chair, and then the COO will follow through. I think just to put a few key matters for, I think, both the committee and government. I mean, the question that was raised about the role of the AG, I would think it's better that this is part of the regularity audit, and the AG already started with the performance aspects of auditing. And that's why, in a sense, in fact, this department offered itself for audits. We are the guinea pig of most of these things that have started in government. It offered itself. We did not know what the consequence of offering ourselves as a department to this audit. Not all departments were audited, but there was a process and we raised our hand. That was my predecessor anyway. And we've done that with DPSA because we want to check what is it that we can improve as a department. And we do work well with the AG in general. But here we do have a problem on interpretation there and there. But also some of the findings have given us a better insight in terms of our ability to improve in the public service. I would say the reason why we have a difference of opinion in some of the areas is that these things are legally provided for in terms of treasurer's guidelines. And the question is, how do you then formulate your reasoning for that accounting officer or that department to make a basis for deviation? And I think the AG's point is that maybe you don't document enough, but the department, technical people, thinks that they've done well in terms of putting that information. All of those deviations were done with approval. So it's not like there is no compliance, but you can improve in terms of the content that is inputted in those approvals. I do want to then go back to, because the key issue on planning, in my understanding when we met with the AG, is really about this issue of forecasting. The estimation, and we are in different views on that. Even now as a department, we are struggling with exactly how do you do this estimation outside of our normal budgeting processes. We don't go and test the market before we actually do the budgeting. So line managers, when they submit for approval, when they procure, they then say, I have 3 million for the goods and services. And out of that, I can then undertake this work, which is priority in terms of what we have in our business and all the strategic plans. think Krishna offered some insights in what she thought we could do. The CFO has got a different understanding of that, and ourselves as management, we're just not clear whether there is a real understanding. And I think this is an area where treasure must work with the AG and clarify exactly how we should actually process. Because our approvals for budget and the EME, our robust process on setting expenditure targets and deliverables, is through the EME process, which is the process that we departments engage with the National Treasury. So we need the AG to be part of that so that we then use these findings and the recommendations to then improve the whole system. I don't think that it would only be improved from the department side, because I think there are areas where we have a root cause problem, and we can look at the root cause. Two, I think if I go through the key on those findings, Lisa will talk to the issues of the environmental management framework, which is that item one. Let me just talk about that item two on the backlogs. I think here, okay, firstly, even before Liz comes in on the item one, when Parliament and the Minister and Cabinet pronounces on the priorities of government, and we are then given an outcome that says environmental affairs in municipalities, refuse removal and air quality management is something that you must help with. Municipalities are unable to undertake that. And Parliament pronounces on that. That is not our function. But we can't say no, we will not do it. We then work out a mechanism. In this case, we worked out a mechanism to work with provinces and municipalities. And in reading the documentation and also the basis of the business plan, because when you read the beauty of having the audit coming with the threat plan and the business plan, you can then look at the whole decision making, what informed even that service, why was it necessary to bring in that service, those service providers. In this case, Liz can talk about the processes. We anticipated that it would take 2 months to consult provinces or municipalities. But in practical terms, before you even appoint the consultant, you have an ongoing consultation process with the provinces, which therefore results in delays. And partly, yes, you would have issues of the DAC meetings. So we have a number of issues of reasons why you have certain areas of delay, especially in the areas where we have to interface with municipalities and with provinces. In the area of waste disposal sites, this one, when the function was transferred from water affairs, we did not have a legislative framework in place. We had to create a legal mechanism to then execute the function. We used initially the ICA provisions. We made a small amendment in terms of the Environmental Conservation Act, followed by the fact that we did not even have a budget. Money did not come with the function for water affairs. Based on that, we used donor funds. Normally, you don't even, when we use donor funds in the department, we don't create internal capacity. It's been a standard practice. Again, if the committee thinks this is something that the department must change into the future, we will then see, we depend on Treasury as well as MTPSA in approving the establishment. It is not encouraged in the public service that you create groups, even if they are for a year contract, because legally, in terms of basic services, the basic conditions of service, is it employment, basic employment act, there is a legal expectation. Once you appoint people in an organization and extend contracts once, twice, you then have the liability to take those people into the establishment. DIA has had a core-sourced kind of model. There are services over time which, after we've done all the planning, we will then integrate in the establishment and provide capacity. In this area of waste services, we are using consultants we have no capacity internally. We have capacity that at least drives and coordinates the function. But in terms of creating that capacity, it is simplistic to say that the final determination is also linked to the issue of internal capacity. Spending 4 million, if you are talking about all the waste disposal sites in the country, the capacity that you need in the establishment is not less than even 10 million for that matter. So to spend that money, you can do the costing and you can make the comparatives. From that assessment, it is not a viable option. But we then say that in terms of improving contract management aspects, I think we can do better in that regard. Coming to the next aviation tariffs. In terms of the Weather Services Act, Weather Services has got a regulatory authority that is appointed by the minister. That regulatory authority runs a process of setting tariffs and engages with the aviation sector and other sectors based on the charges that they can claim for the use of or selling some of their products in terms of the work of the Weather Service. This work we undertake in concert, we facilitate the actual administration, but they are the ones that have to be comfortable. They set the terms of reference and so on. Again, they are an independent body, which the department requires to exercise the functions of the Weather Service. So there, I think, again, I am not sure about the issues of planning and cost reflectiveness, because the longer it takes to do the consultation processes within industry, firstly, during this period, I have established that even in the industry, there was a disagreement in terms of what could be paid in terms of tariffs, because we needed to revise the tariffs of the Weather Service. In consultation with Treasury, as well as making also international comparisons. So I am certain in terms of issues of economy, I doubt really whether this was not an economical service. And again, I'm not sure what actions can be put in place to improve on the economy that is projected here, versus the revenue that we're getting. If you look at the Weather Services a report in terms of the revenue that they pronounced or they collected over that period, you would see that it's not uneconomical to have had this service. So I don't understand enough about how we arrive at the finding on the economics of it. Coming to the next one on the issue of the building. Let me just jump. Number 9, 2010, honourable members, we did not feature in the 2010 agreements as a Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. The minister, through the LOC process and the steering committee of ministers and government, then was at some point required to put in place a greening framework. And it was an urgent requirement because there were certain timelines that had to be met in terms of meeting the performance, the green performance of the host city. So that, in essence, was an urgent matter. And it does not qualify like you have floods and tomorrow you must. It qualifies on the basis that we needed to respond at an appropriate point, and basically the department used considering the services that are within that are provided in terms of treasury prescriptions. You can look at the service providers that have done work in this particular area who are in the database, and we procured on that basis. So this was an urgent required service in terms of LOC, because it was not a function of the department, and it was donor funded, not coming from an appropriated vote. So we had to first find money, and we had a process with some of the international partners that were keen to then help us to help with the greening of the 2010 event. saying it was donor funded. MI Tree Consortium, my understanding here, honorable members, from reading also from the documentation that we process in the department, because some of these things do predate my term. The terms of reference, yes, included green requirements, but the department, because of the imaging issues, required additional greening specifications. We expected now that the green building should have a green certification. It was not, the grading of the building was not on the card at the time of starting the project. So it was a variation that was based on additional greening requirements. It is not on the basis that the initial terms of reference were not adhered to. They adhered to, and all the service providers that were the preferred bidders for our green building came with a proposal, but then we had to do this additional work to aid the process of negotiations in terms of the final green building. So that is the reason for that that deviation. And the issue of then functionality versus the way the scoring was done, I think honorable members, it may have been an oversight that the performance or the functionality was set at a lower threshold, maybe. That's what I think. And I think in the time until actually AG explained this to me, we had more of those. The tender committee of the department, when it was awarding in the past, tended to approve more, even if you have higher scores, which are normally because your price, you have a lower price as well as the BEE credentials. There are areas where the work is of a technical nature where the bidding committee of the DAC of the department has decided to award the high technical performing organization in terms of the scoring. So it has happened in this case, and the accounting officer at that point also approved. So it's the DAC, which is the Department Adjudication Committee, made that assessment, and that's how that was finalized. And I think from the information that I then got after my meeting with Elsa, is it Elsa? Krishna. I wanted to look at the practice notice. We looked at it afterwards, and then I was convinced that this is how we should be doing it. And I think the department has been amended, and we are definitely sticking to how then the treasury practice notice is dictating we should. So in this area, I would say that it's definitely a correct finding in that regard. But the part that is not correct, or 100% correct, is the fact that the deviation, what is it? What do you call the deviation from the TPP? What is it called? The variation. The variation was more on the basis of the upgrading of the needs for a green performing building. Coming to the consult the GDP number 12, again, I'm just going to talk about the area of internal capacity. As Krishna said, we followed all the processes. Number one, in terms of the Public Service Act, there is a provision for secondment. And that provision, the Minister of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism would submit for concurrence to the Minister of Finance and the Minister of DPSA. And both those ministers concurred. And with all the extensions, there were those extensions based on those approvals. And the basis for that submission was that the department was not in a position to create internal capacity for project management. However, since that 2000, there was a phasing out of consultants. And the last part of the appointment was single source, based on the fact that we had people that then had established the chief directorate for project management. And when you compare the cost of that chief directorate right now, not just a chief director, I'm talking now about the function itself, we are spending more than what we've spent even in this period in respect of the value that we have received. All the systems that were put in place for the processing projects and the contracting system for the expanded public works program came out of this work. And yes, there was not a specific indication on the contract and the terms of reference around the issue of skills transfer. And I think that is a deficiency. But the skills transfer did happen in the process once the chief directorate was established. So I think that in terms of the value for money aspect, I still I am of the view from the information that I have in the department that this was a quite valuable program. Yes, the figures look big, but we're talking about having spent more than 10 billion of projects over the period of time. So the project started small, but it has been growing over time, and now we are at a point where we're spending even more than a billion a year on these kinds of programs. So in terms of that percentage, I think that is what I based the fact that here we have earned a lot of value and we have improved because we phased out those consultants. The last comment that I wanted to make before Lisa then can talk about how we have and partly remember the projects we split between tourism and environment. So some of the activities were carried through to the new department, and the same consultant we used to establish the function in the new department, which is also accounting for the overall expenditure in that regard. Remember, I was the accounting officer for 2009 during the split of the departments in 2010. So I took all the risks of establishing the new department and facilitated those, and most of those costs were therefore reflected in this expenditure, both on projects as well as some of the other management support areas. So Liz will talk to the key problematic areas, but I think in the main, honourable members, I think one, we have to differentiate our robustness that is linked to donor funding. At times we use consultants that we agree with the international donor to use versus what you would prefer, maybe as the robustness of that process is different. Two, when we use then the voted funds, we probably have to look at this recommendation in a particular way. And then thirdly, where we share functions and support municipalities, because there are issues of mandate, they are key governance and consultation processes that do result in delays. But we've learned the lessons through these programs. It was the first time we had to do the waste work. We have improved, and I think in future when the AG looks at what has been put in place in terms of that contract management, the same with planning, the environmental management framework. Right now with the infrastructure build program, there's more value for that we are getting out of the Liphalale EMF area. And that environmental management framework was developed through those service providers. And basically, we now know how much it costs to do an EMF. Those were the very first EMFs that we had to contract on. Now we know what the range is, and we can at least do better cost estimation in that regard. Thanks.
Thank you, Lizzie. Yes. Good explanations. Ms. McCourt?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to talk about the system improvements that we've made, and in that process refer to some of the examples, but I'll be quick, Chair. Firstly, in terms of the supply chain process improvement, and the section around is the department run by consultants, the committee would remember that about a year ago we have presented to the committee our criteria for using, when do we outsource work and when do we do it internally. And linked to that, I must just mention that this department is consistently below the vacancy target set by the DPSA. So we do not have an issue of having a lot of vacant positions where we have consultants doing that work. Our vacancy is below 12% consistently. In terms of the criteria for outsourcing, so the first one is where the work is not our mandate or our core business. And I want to refer back to the example of the waste permitting backlog. Because what we have outsourced there is not issuing permits on backlog. It was assisting municipalities to get the applications submitted to DIA, for DIA to issue the permits. So the assisting the backlog was actually around quantifying what the backlog is and getting the applications submitted to us. That is not our function. Our function was to issue the permits, but the applications had to be with us before we could issue the permits. So that is really not a DIA capacity or mandate work, and it wouldn't be value for money or justified to create permanent capacity in the organization for that. Then the other area would be in terms of where there is a short-term capacity issue. And here I think we need to bear in mind the lengthy process both through DPSA and in getting the budget approved to increase capacity beyond your existing structure. You have to do it in a financial cycle. You cannot out of turn just increase capacity. So you have, and the EIA backlog, which is not one of the things that was audited, was one of those examples where we've identified the need, but we could only get the capacity online in the next financial cycle, so we've outsourced that work. Then there are where we assist provinces and municipalities as per our constitutional mandate to do that, where we have concurrent functions. And lastly, we also have legislative requirements or cabinet decisions that force us. And there's other areas as well, but these are four of the main areas that we list. For example, we are forced by law to use CETA in many of the work that we do, and CETA tend to outsource that work to even a third or fourth party. And also in terms of bulk media buying, one of the matters that is mentioned there is the HR recruitment process. There's also a cabinet decision that comply us or that impose on departments the responsibility to do bulk media buying through the GCIS or the Government Communication and Information Services. In terms of the needs assessment estimate, so what we've done in terms of the system of that, and we were hoping to give you those reports, it will be printed and sent to you. All the outsourced work is detailed in a database. We say what was the reason for outsourcing this work, what is the value of the tender, who's responsible for it, and we have that detail for these years that is in here, and we will provide that. In terms of the needs assessment and estimates, DG did talk about that, and we do, however, have attempt to do a whole lot more in terms of that. And here we make a differentiation between where we can benchmark. In other words, you will see over the years that our costing on environmental management frameworks is now almost spot on because we have experience. The first time that we've done an EMF is not done nowhere else in the world. There was no way that we could estimate what the cost would be or what the time would be, although we've tried to do that in terms of what we've envisaged that process to do. And the same could be said for SACWIS. In terms of the SACWIS process, we have actually dealt with non-performance, which had an impact, non-performance of the service provider. The cost was absorbed by themselves. You would see there was no increase in the cost, but they had to bring a subcontractor on board because they haven't performed against the terms of reference, and that had a time implication. But even with that, it was groundbreaking work done for the first time internationally. We've done it. We couldn't precisely say what is going to be required. It was learning by doing. So we have now got the guidelines out in terms of reference, and we have a scrutiny process in terms of making the specifications as clear as possible, and it gets signed off at DDG level after supply chain has given assurance that it meets the requirements. We in the submission to the Director General as the accounting officer on all outsourcing work, we reflect now two things. One is what is the budget that is available, and secondly, what is our cost estimate, to make a differentiation between what it is that we have certainty about and what is it what we estimate it is going to cost, and also what is our response if there's a shortfall. So either we're going to do it through reprioritization, something that has been budgeted for is going to fall away, or we're going to extend the project to be over a longer period of time so that we can absorb it in two budget cycles. And then we also, in the submissions to the DG, we provide the reasons, this issue around the urgency, qualifying the urgency, if we're going to use a single source as our provider, if we want to use a specific service provider, in other words, if we don't follow a competitive process, what are the reasons, and we refer back to the relevant Treasury regulations for the DG to then approve that. We have then also provided all of this guidance in terms of costing and assistance. In some instances, we do, if it's a very big project, and we have no way of costing it, we would put out requests for proposals and then base the ultimate tender process on a non-discriminatory way to use that information to benchmark what the cost is. We would look at benchmarking, and we also have places where there is this uncertainty, where we now deliberately phase projects. If you cannot, at the beginning of the project, because you haven't done the screening of how severe the air quality problem is, for example, you don't know what the solution is going to be, we would then phase that project or that tender process to first only do the screening, and then based on the screening and scoping, then exercise the rest of the functions. We've built in also, in terms of the structure that we've presented to you, controls at different places. Both in terms of our internal audits, we have increased controls in terms of the specifications get signed off by the DDG. That's the terms of reference. So the delegation for that...
That's good enough.
It is, in terms of the...
If you and the DG are responsible to sign up on the specs.
Chair, I think it is in terms of...
You know, you have people that can probably read and write, and they can see, I can hold them responsible.
I'm very serious
because, you know,
yeah.
A DDG is under pressure to do work, okay? You're telling an aide, meet your deadline. Now, sometimes what I feel is they then rush me. Let's get the thing out, let's get it going, and so on, with all your checks and balances you've explained. And what worries me is that we're spending money, and it's only read to a certain point, stops at the DDG. The DG and you, the COO, and the minister don't read that spec and say, but is this good enough? Isn't it good enough? I mean, shouldn't there be more here? I mean, so I must say, it's something that from the beginning struck my head is who's signing off on these specs that are imprecise. So your nice answer, your right answer will be, Chair, from now on we're going to change the rules and we will sign off on the specs. That would be the right answer, but let me go.
Chair, I think what we can undertake to do is, if you've tested this and we still have the findings that is here, that we then revert to that. Because what we have moved into the system is that the terms of reference, in terms of the logical flow, is now going through more checks in terms of compliance with the guidance, etc. And that is actually, that approval is granted before the DG approves the outsourcing.
Has been more on the other aspects in terms of treasury requirements, more in terms of budgets and knowing how they're going to arrive at the cost. It's not the actual technical specifications, I would think.
You know, every single one of these 12, there are only 15 contracts here. Every single one of them has problems with planning. Now, I expect that you've now put a new system in place, and I just do not understand why you're letting it stop at it. But I must tell you, I feel very uncomfortable. I feel very uncomfortable. I want this thing to be my DG and my CEO when I ask them. I don't want them to say, ask the DDG. I do not know. Because the plan you're putting in front of me now is ask my DDG. I do not know. I did not sign off.
Chair, maybe the way to resolve that is then when the DG approves the principle of outsourcing, it must then come with the specifications so that we both can then look at the specifications.
Look, I'm sitting in the left here. I can sleep tonight much easier if you change that.
See, that's what I tried to explain. That is what the system will do now. Because in the past, we had the outsourcing approved with draft terms of reference or specifications attached to it and the cost estimation. What the new system does is it takes the terms of reference through the supply chain and the technical check. And in some instances, Mr. Kwasi must advise me, there's even the evaluation committee that is not the ultimate awarding committee, but the evaluation committee also look into the specifications before it gets published if the grant value of a project is above a certain amount. I think it's 500,000. So there is far more processes before the accounting officers sign off on the principle of outsourcing. All of these processes culminate into that process with already the specifications signed off.
I'm not signing off only on the principles, as long as you have read, and I can ask you as you read.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, Chair, in terms of the committees, the different sending evaluations and adjudication committee problem, one of the key things that we have changed is, apart from increasing the number of chairs, because yes, there was instances that it was postponed or cancelled on a specific instance because there was not a chair available, but there was also instances where it was cancelled because there was no document submitted by the people that want to process it. So the CFO and the Supply Chain Management Chief Directorate has now implemented a robust demand management system where the DAC, both the tender evaluation committee meetings and the adjudication or awarding committee meetings, is driven by a preset annual demand plan. And then managers is supposed to, in their monthly reports to the DG chair, the DDGs must report monthly to the DG on whether they are meeting those time frames which they said at the beginning of the year they would meet. And the DAC meetings, if documents are submitted, the DAC meeting will go ahead. And that has been factored into our calendar, so there won't be any missing of those dates if there is a demand for that meeting to happen.
The difficulty still though on costing, because my problem and my challenge is if managers, before they submit for approval, they already go and check what it would cost. You already, in fact, that is more, you can have an unintended consequence of real corruption, because now people know this is how much it's going to cost. They go and tell people, and people then submit tenders. That is not what we do. People bring on the basis of their budget. That more or less this is what they provided for. And the question is, how do you make that precise? because that's what is going to continue to cause a problem in respect to exactly how much can you fund this project. I also do not know whether we can have a contract for 5 years.
But DG, wouldn't the correct specs take a lot of that problem away? It seems to me that her problem...
But in that same process, I'm also approving a budget.
Yeah,
when
I know that,
but what I
understood their problem was this. When it's too precise and it costs 22 million in 10 contracts, because the things are imprecise, then in the end it costs 42, 41, whatever figure they get. Now, they ascribe that, not necessarily that you didn't get your figures right, but that you got your specs wrong. But because the specs are wrong, the contract changes, there's variations, and therefore 22 becomes 41. That's what I understood it as. If they're telling us that prior to you giving out a tender, that you must already know how much it's going to cost, well, clearly that can't be right.
Chair, I think there was two issues linked to that. The one is the variation during the process, and that is linked correctly, as you said, in terms of the specifications and the ability to contract accordingly. The second issue was raised in terms of the practice of the department in the past has been to reflect the budget that you've allocated to the project in your planning process, to reflect that in your submission as the cost when the principle of outsourcing and the specifications of outsourcing is rooted.
As part of the tender?
No, you don't put it in the tender in terms of what you submit to the accounting, because the accounting officer needs to, basically when she approves that we can use a service provider, but she also give herself the assurance that we have the money available to pay the service provider.
You get a service provider, but you're not allowed to go over 2 million.
Yes. So what we've now changed in the process is to say this is the budget. We estimate that it's going to be more or less, but in the way that the DG approves it, she doesn't bind herself to that because it's going to depend on what is going to be reasonably considered in terms of the contract. If we can ultimately not afford it, then the DHC or the committee that do the awarding of the tender then does not have a mandate to award. So if there isn't budget available within the time frame assigned,
okay,
we cannot.
The problem now?
The problem is that there was an expectation, and they've mentioned it a couple of times. The dilemma that we have is that we have a voted budget. And they see that bad planning if we cannot forecast more accurately before you even outsource what that tender amount should be, and we then, so there's three phases to it. It's in terms of how much money do you need to do this, and then are you managing that through your specifications ultimately, etc. So there's the link of the specifications to the cost, but our limitation is long before that, 3 years before that, we've got budget already.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest something.
Yeah.
Okay, down with the rest, I'm going to suggest something.
So, Chair, in terms of that process, then we then have the control measures, as I said, where we have in these committees now specific forms where we check against all the practice notices and the treasury regulations requirements, and we have everything, and we are busy still continuously improving the system around the record keeping of that. But I think you see the spreadsheet of everything that is outsourced in the 3 years that's under question here, you would see the level of record keeping, including the names that you want to share, who was the project manager in each one of those instances. So there's a whole lot of system improvements. In that system improvements, we've also made it very strict in terms of who's accountable and responsible at what steps, where the delegations are, and we've aligned the systems with that. I think just one more thing in terms of the time delays on something where we work with municipalities. the differences between the MFMA and the PFMA is also a problem here. So if we have a co-funded project, like many of these EMFs are, the reason why that negotiation takes so long is because we then contract the consultant to do X in terms of the PFMA, and we follow our procedures for that, and the municipality then do the rest of the project, but in essence, it is the same project. So we've now got different ways of doing it. Subsequently, we now transfer, and so I think if you look at the environmental management frameworks now, you will see there's still delays because it's a negotiation process. But we have shortened it where we could.
And that's excellent. Look, a lot of the things you said, I'm very pleased with. It looks like you've made a lot of systemic changes. I'm going to propose two things. Firstly, I want DG and CFO and COO and whoever else you need to meet with the AG and Treasury. And I want you to talk through these areas where there's difference of opinion and see if we can get the three of you to find solutions how to deal with those differences. Like this last one you mentioned about, I mean, are there ways to get around this and what is it exactly they expect? And then I want you guys to report back to us and say on these things here, when there's another audit, there's going to be problems because we can't agree on how to do this. And this is what the rules say, and they interpret like this, we interpret like this. Okay, so I want the three of you to get together and just go through that nicely and see if we can talk away some of those differences of opinion. To a lot of it what you're saying, if you've done all the steps you've done and they see what you've done, then surely they can see whether it fits in there and whether it works or doesn't work. Okay, so that's the one thing. The second thing I want is that Mrs. Miller and whoever else, if she wants to get the team that's involved here, but I want them to, during the next 2 or 3 days when I ask them to tell us what's going on in the department, I want them to have gone through these processes and to see whether they think we've dealt properly with the problems that have been identified. Is that fair enough? I'm sure they've looked at it already, so there shouldn't be a problem for them in the next 2 or 3 days, just to give us a report to say, this is all now working better, but these, yeah, are problematic. Okay, those are the two things I want you to do for us. I have to rush off, so I'm going to ask someone to come and chair here because I want the committee to ask questions to the department if they want to. I don't want not to ask. The last thing I wanted to say is I wanted to say thank you to both of you. I thought that the AG, I think this procedure is a very valuable one, but I think it will be more valuable if you guys go and sit down and fine-tune it. I think firstly, you're trying to pin everything around this word consultant. I think muddies the water from the outset. You mentioned consultant to me. I'm ANC. You mentioned consultant to Ms. Ferguson, who's Coke, and Ms. Wenger. All of us, Bristol, all of us, to a man and to a woman, we bristle when you use that, because we know of various instances in government where this has clearly been used to abuse, for nepotism, for a whole lot of things. Okay. Now, I think for you guys to hang your head on that term, you're really befuddling yourselves from the beginning. I think there's much, much more clever ways to do exactly the same work. The second thing is, you see, it's problematic when you start your reports and tell us 31 billion and da-da-da, but your own procedures, as Madame has explained, is that what you actually only report on is the ones you actually physically look at and audit. I agree with that one. I like that one because I think that is giving a true reflection. I can now really answer something. I don't look at the other 10, the 10... 10th, 11th, if you know what I mean. I look at one part, the 1/11th part of the contracts. And And for you to reflect it like that muddies the waters again. And I would think it would be much better if you reflect that you've done contracts for 57 million and we know what we're talking about. Then, if you really, 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 look, for you, of course, I think you get your answers you want. But for us, without you coming in to interpret this stuff for us and explaining to us, it's like, it's as clear as mud. As clear as dirty mud. As dirty as it can be. So, you know this thing about planning? It is so huge. And when you actually talk to us, you actually identify exactly the problem. The problem is lack of specifics, your specs. Your specs are not clear. Now, why don't we just say that? Why do we put it under a huge umbrella of planning? And we don't have any subcategories. And so it almost makes it impossible for us to start looking at it. I mean, if you at least say specs is a problem in all 15 contracts, then immediately I can start holding the DG accountable to the specs and so on. If you say planning, then I have to go and read somewhere what planning means. I have to look at the whole spectrum of planning to try and understand it and then hold the DG accountable. So your category of planning, I think, needs some breaking down. That is, then it will really help us because then we can hold people to account. And then I said who follows up, but I've given my own answer. I'm going to ask Mrs. Miller, who is responsible for that department, to follow up and tell me whether you know these things are being done correctly according to the AG, so I can understand that. And then, you see, the other thing, madam, the criteria we use for which contracts we look at. You see, this thing about using the, you say contracts, you say agency, and you say consultants. Now, for me being a lawyer, I mean, all those are contracts. If there's an agency, if there's a contract you've got with someone, or there's a tender you go through and you then sign a contract, it's contracts. So it's very difficult to understand your categorization. If you say to me, one category is tenders, then I understand better. And I like that if the one category is tenders. Because tenders is where a lot of the problems lie. Contracts, there are less problems because you sign something between you. The chances of corruption in a contract, in the wording of the contract, is much smaller. Well, it shouldn't be there at all because why would you put it in a contract? So it may happen flowing from that. So I'm just thinking that your categorizations and so on and your putting almost everything under consultants really makes it difficult. Whereas if we're going to go and you guys in the future want to pinpoint something, the ones that I would want to see pinpointed are the ones where you think the department shouldn't have had tenders or contracts, where they should be doing it themselves, even if they don't have them. I mean, that's the ones I think which are the important ones. The ones where they get someone to deliver a service, to service the Agalas, to be the mechanics of the Agalas, to fix the boat. You know, I mean, what, so what? I mean, it's a contract there. To Sandy, the people they use to guard their gates. It's a contract that no one's going to look too much. But it's the ones like these, yeah, I think the ones that you pulled out. There should be surely be a way that we can categorize them. And as I'm saying, it's the ones that are borderline and the ones where they should have the capacity. Now, of all the 15, there were only two where maybe they should have had the capacity. What you're telling me then, all the others should be there. It's whether we're doing them good enough and clean enough. And yeah. So I think you guys will, if you just give some thought to this, I think this can become even a more valuable tool. It's already very valuable, but I think it's become very more valuable. And if you really, and this is what I said to your deputy AG, if you want me to use your work to make government work better, I'd love to do that, but then he must help me to do it. He can't do it in a way that I then need to appoint an auditor to help me do that work. You have to do it in a way where you actually can present it, as I'm saying, break it down more and so on, so that, because the only way I'm going to hold them accountable through your work is if you are able to empower me to do that. Sorry? Skills transfer. You can, unless you want to employ an auditor to help me to actually analyze it, that would be. But I think your point, I hope you're understanding. It's not a criticism. It's, if it's a useful tool, it'll be more useful the more we break it down, and you then can help me that I can hold them to account. Because then I've got specifics I can say to my DG, did you do this, did you do that? So I just wanted to say I thought the work was excellent. I think the department's response has been good. We'll see if it was good enough when Mrs. Miller comes, and I hope you have that meeting to try and sort out the areas where there may be some dispute. Mr. Skosana, can I ask you to come and take over here quickly? I need to rush off. And all that's left for the meeting is just to give members a chance to grill. And please watch my words, grill the department as vigorously as you possibly can for all these mistakes, particularly those fools that don't write things down. Can you quickly? Will this organize, where's the meeting tomorrow? Good of 10. Okay. 9:30 tomorrow, good show, after Mr. Skosana has adjourned. Okay. I'm sorry I have to wrestle, but I'm already half an hour late.
Honorable members,
for you, and we learn, and hopefully we can get to a point of satisfying all the requirements within what is humanly possible. And I think the AG dealt with this assignment with quite a lot of integrity and robustness. I mean, we quite were in a fighting mode when we started looking at the report. It's really, even our own hair was like, oh my God, why this? But we, I think that there's value in it, and we can do things differently and improve in the manner in which we run the business of government. So thank you, I think.
That was the last comment from the department, and I'm tempted now to come to the end of the meeting. But before that, what I can say is that the comments made by Chairperson Honorable DeLang, I should think you must stick to it and make sure that you refine everything and submit that report so that we can learn from that report, particularly to find one another. That's very important, because we can have different ideologies from you, and that's why the chairperson said, no, go back and sit down and fine-tune some of the issues where you don't see when we don't. I try to do that, and let's look forward in bringing that report so that we can build from there. For one family, one nation, and I should think we'll work together in order to deal with all these matters. Honorable members, the department, DG, and your team, AG, thank you very much for coming to this meeting and give us such a valuable presentation. And your participation, members, thank you very much. The meeting, before we adjourn our meeting, honorable members, you have been given a package, plenty of documents there. You must come with them tomorrow for presentation, because the presentation will continue tomorrow. And you must